This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia.
Our Ragnarokers are basically warriors. It's not just a sport. And we're feeling all of that challenge. And we're willing all of that mana and that magic to the team so that all of the ferociousness that they're giving off to the opposition, it comes through in the way they play.
In the Pacific, your rugby team is a marker of your identity. Every time players step onto the field, they're carrying the weight of their coach, their fans, family, and their entire communities on their backs. There's a lot at stake, and things can get heated, like really heated. But why? Why does it feel so much deeper than just a game? Inter-village rivalries have been part of our cultures long before rugby landed on our shores. And even though the violent village wars are not common now, our battles are playing out in a different way. I'm Seyuli Salama Sina Von Reiki, and this is Culture Compass, an exploration of survival, revival, and connection throughout the Pacific. So, we know that rugby, and sport in general, is a crucial part of culture in lots of Pacific nations. But it's especially so in Fiji. Just ask Letha Movono. She's a Fijian journalist and rugby lover. She knows exactly how important sport is to all Fijians.
If you go to every single 120 plus inhabited islands of Fiji, every single traditional village you go to, and it's the same for towns and cities, you will find two things for sure, no matter the size of that village. One is a church and the other is a playing pitch. About 99% of those pitches are rugby fields. Some of our islands, the ones that are closer to Tonga, they're cricket pitches. But yeah, that's it. That's how important sports is in Fiji. It's a critical part of daily life.
That passion. When players take the rugby field in local games, are there off-field rivalries that come into play?
Yes, absolutely. Fiji is a very provincial country. Our traditional structure is still very strong and very prominent in the way we do everything here. We are essentially 14 little kingdoms and three confederacies of those kingdoms. So there are competitions at clan level, tribal level, and then you have the provincial level. So all of the intricacies of the relationships that exist in that traditional hierarchy comes onto the rugby field and the spills both ways. And so it's very common for entire provinces to back a rugby team or a few, because the way that rugby was developed in this country was done at provincial level. You know, the Europeans who brought rugby to Fiji, the colonial administrators, just looked at the way we had a very sophisticated and advanced traditional hierarchy and thought, here we go, that's how you infiltrate the sport into the country.
Wow, how you explain that. Rivalries that have existed before pre-colonialism and are now playing out in the rugby field. That is very interesting. I don't think anyone else in the Pacific can do it the way Fijians do it. So much passion and love and getting into it on the field. Oh my goodness. What do those rivalries mean for the fans? Is there an intensity to the way fans get behind their teams?
Yes, very much so. And I've often been asked, you know, how are you so invested in rugby and in the traditional and cultural factors that contribute to Fiji's obsession with rugby? And I think initially my answer would be, well, I was a woman growing up at a time when women were shunned away from the rugby pitch. So, you know, you tend to move into that else as part of it, I guess. But you know, as a journalist, you wonder about these things because you look at Samoa and you look at Tonga, and you look at, you know, the other Pacific Island countries and you wonder, how is it a crazy obsession here and not there? So, yes, I think our provincial rivalries and our provincial structure, our traditional structure, rather, is very much a reason it's such an obsession here. Because the way that rugby fit into some traditional concepts is kind of the reason we do it so well here, or maybe the other way around. For one such concept that I think, but I know that there are a lot of other journalists that, you know, that believe this as well, is Sano Salavaki, to quote my younger brother who did his PhD on it, is it's social capital. So it's basically an entire community, and there's hundreds or thousands of people coming together for a greater good. It won't have anything to do with them, you know, probably won't have a personal gain, but it'll be great for the village or great for the identity of the village or the brand, to use a modern Western concept. So they come together, whether it's to outfit or to resource or to support or to lend their voice at a match to cheer. It's all easy to bring into the rugby space because it's already a cultural thing for us. Eh? And so the fans are very heavily invested because these are familiar concepts. So Sonu Salavaki, a wonderful illustration I like to tell people when I'm discussing this is, for example, you will often see, and this has happened, you will see 30 buses go from one province to another, traveling 3-4 hours, 5 hours even, to go and cheer for a 90-minute game. And they will be people from villages that are very remote, but they'll all be wearing their provincial colors. They will have somehow all rehearsed and know the same cheers, the same songs, and they will learn everything.
I have to tell you a story. My grandfather, when he found out that women were allowed to play rugby, he was very sad. He said, this is going to be the end of our generations to come. All the women in Samoa are going to go play rugby and take all their traditional rivalries onto the field. That's the end.
Yes. You know what I would tell people? It's the moms, the sisters, the girlfriends and the wives who really create all of that intensity behind the rugby. I mean, they're the ones cooking all the food, you know, that having on the taro food.
Yeah.
They're the ones washing the uniforms. So don't be surprised when you see that it's the moms and the grandmoms who are out there by the side of the field, cheering really loudly with so much passion.
Are there any specific teams in Fiji National Rugby League or smaller local leagues that have notorious rivalries?
My own personal opinion is that the grades in rugby in Fiji, and this is probably linked somehow to our economic prowess, they're usually from those provinces that have a lot of resources. So, you know, lots of land, lots of people. So, for example, in the highlands of the main island, Itilevu, in the province of Naitasiri, always produces some of the most fastest, biggest men into our rugby team. So imagine someone at 120 kgs, 150 kgs coming at you very, very fast. That's what Naitasiri rugby players were known for. Very healthy, very physical. And they're also very, I'm trying to find a word that won't get me into trouble with the people of Naitasiri, but, you know, ferocious, passionate. The main town in Nandonga is in fact called Rugby Town, Singotoka. Imagine people coming from all the way there to a province that's about 3-4 hours away by bus. And then you have a brawl, and then you have to escape that. It's quite akin to, you know, what I imagine tribal warfare was like in ancient times.
Wow. As you're talking, I'm just imagining everything that's going on around you at a game. I've been at a game where a mum has run on with the coconut salu to smack the opposition off her son.
Yes, yes.
And that's
yes.
That's just triggered everything off. Yeah,
exactly. It's a very common Pacific energy or vibe, I think. My best friend lives in Perth. Her son plays in the other 16 team of the Western Force, and she talks about her Samoan and her Tongan mum friends who will sit by the sidelines and yell out calls or, you know, tell the coach who to sub next. So I think it's very much part of who we are as Pacific Islanders.
Has rugby or sporting competitions in general changed the way village rivalries are expressed in Fiji?
Yes. Whereas in the past, people would, you know, literally fight for land, and in some of the glorious, if you can call it that, wars and battles, which are documented by historians. Now the rivalry is on the field. And so the way that those rivalries are expressed are either in the colors that people are wearing or in the songs and the cheers that people sing. And so I always wonder if this is a very peculiar to Fiji only thing. You will often have musical hits that are put together specifically for, say, the big tournament, a big rugby tournament or a big high school rugby championship or something like that. And the designs on the merchandise, they're not just representative of rugby, you know, they're representative of the Teutonic symbols of these provinces. So it's a modern day tribal warfare now. We're doing it on the field and the fans do it in the way they support. It's quite peculiar, but it's very exciting.
Can you tell us a bit about the Dhimbi or Bole that the Fijian national team perform at the start of international games?
So Te Vovo is basically saying getting to battle stations almost. It's almost like telling all of the soldiers or the warriors, get to your positions. Right to my, which is when they're pointing at the All Blacks or pointing at the Wallabies, saying to the enemies, look at us. It's almost a way to instill fear. It's basically saying, I will attack your defenses. I will uproot your trees. It's quite ferocious. It's quite violent. But we sing it with pride now, because now it's about taking down your rugby strategy. Now it's about, yes, we know you have the big budgets and the wonderful gyms and the sports scientists, but we've got the passion and the flair, and our rugby players are basically warriors, that it's not just the sport. So and Dhimbi and the Imbole is, again, another feature of tribal warfare that's made it into the rugby field. And it's very sacred for us. When the boys are doing it in the sitting rooms, in the living rooms, around Fiji and around the world where Fijians are, we're quiet and we're feeling all of that challenge and we're willing all of that mana and, you know, that magic to the team, so that all of the ferociousness that they're, you know, giving off to the opposition, it comes through in the way they play.
The goosebumps. You just given me goosebumps and shivers up my spine. Why do you think rugby has become such a huge part of Fijian culture and society?
There's lessons to be learned about maybe other aspects of life in Fiji. But as history tells us, solistonebaki, where everyone comes together for the good of the whole, not necessarily for the individualistic gain, it's made rugby very easily adapted and integrated into Fijian life, to the point where I don't think anyone in Fiji remembers that this is actually a European game, that it's a British or a Scottish game. As far as we're concerned, this is our game. We invented this. So that solistonebaki concept that is quite intrinsic to Fijian culture, it's the basis of which rugby has been done well at provincial level here. But also, there are some values that are very basic to what it means to be kaiviti or nitoke, which is na vostota, perseverance, above all else, going against the odds. And I think that's what Fijian pride in Fiji rugby is driven by as well. The fact that we're a tiny nation with next to nothing, but, you know, we're punching well above our weight. Eh? So that vosota, despite all of the difficulties and the lack of resources and the better preparation on the other side, we will vosota to the point of bravery. Virongrongoli, which is to always listen to the other person, regardless of a difference of opinion or a difference of stature, maybe, or even a difference in culture and cultural trait. Because remember, we're 14 different kingdoms, essentially, but we will listen. We will listen to the other person. And I think that, as I said at the beginning, it's the tribalism. We were great warriors. We ate the remains of the people we defeated because we believed that they were brave to have fought us and that their spirit must be brave. So in consuming them, we take on that bravery. When you remove that from Fijian culture, like you said, conveniently, the ferociousness, competitiveness of rugby was a worthwhile substitute for that very essential trait in what it means to be Fijian. So in modern day Fijian culture, it's not just the romanticism with which we look at rugby. It's essential.
To dig further into why inter-village rivalries is so ingrained in our cultural fabric, we spoke with Dr. Tarisi Vunidelo. She is a Fijian anthropology and archaeology professor at the University of Hawaii in Hilo. At a very young age, Tarisi remembers being told by her elders what she could and couldn't do when she visited relatives in neighboring villages.
When we used to go from our district to another village on the other side, which is my mom's district, we were given like a talk by our parents and our aunties and uncles, and they tell us, if you go to this village, you know, make sure you do X, Y, and Z. And when you go to this village, make sure you do this because, and then they give us the reason. And, you know, when we were little, you know, every village is just a home for our relatives, but little did we know that there are these underlying relationships. So I think when it comes to rivalry, that's the main word that comes to mind, relationship. So the one that I know very well was to do with our district, Yawe, where my father's from, and my mother's district, Tawuki. So when I was growing up, you know, whenever we have family get-togethers, there's always this kind of banter that take place when we have visitors from Tawuki visiting us. Whenever there's like loud laughter, that's when everybody will know, someone from Tawuki is here. You know, for some reason, they just measure the decibels of the noise. And it's kind of amazing when we were told that the district of Iawe and the district of Tawuki, they have this rivalry relationship. And of course, you know, for me being a very inquisitive child, I asked my mom, why? Why is it between Iawe and Tawuki and not Nawukeleu, which is the neighboring district? And so my mom told us a story. And the story goes like this, that in Kandawabu, we have 9 districts, but the chiefly district out of all the 9 is Tawuki, which is where my mom's from. But when there was a war, this war must have taken place like 5 generations ago. So it must have been like maybe the 1700s or even 1600s, even earlier, I'm sure. And this war, my great-great-great-grandfathers, you know, who were alive at that time, they actually helped the people of Tawuki to win the war. But when the news was taken to everyone around Fiji about this particular war, out of respect, the people of Yahweh, they took the back seat. They gave the prominence to Tawuki and they say, hey, just tell them you want it in your own way. But the people of Yahweh, for over so many generations, we knew that we gave them the win. You know, so it was very interesting. And, you know, as I grew up and I understood, I'm like, wow, that is beautiful. So even until now, that rivalry still exists.
It's amazing the feuds that carry on. Can you paint us a picture of what kinds of rivalries usually existed throughout Fiji?
Yes, so rivalry, it comes in different forms. You know, most of the rivalry, the traditional rivalries originally, you know, started off by special relationships that took place generations earlier. When it comes to rivalries in Fiji, they come in different layers. You know, so one layer would be from a family relationship, for example, cross cousins. So in Fiji, we have a relationship called tawale. So tawale is a cross cousin. So the children of my mom's brother's children. So the gender has to cross. That's the only relationship we can banter with. The other relationship of children whose fathers are brothers or mothers are sisters, that's what it's called, parallel cousins. It's a no-no, right? There's more respect in there. Rivalry even starts within the family through the tawale relationship. As soon as I see my cousin, whatever she has is mine. That's basically what we were told, and vice versa. And then for the village one that I talked about earlier, the Iawe district and the Tawuki district, it can go really, really extreme, right? It can go north or south, whichever way you want to take. So the banter that I've seen with my own eyes is through traditional ceremonies, you know, like the dancing. You know, usually when we have gatherings, there's always the siwa, you know, the meke, you know, when they're dancing. So what happens is if the group of ladies from my district, they are dancing, it'll be one or two from the audience from the rival district that will stand up and they'll take the baby powder, anything that will make the other person not look beautiful anymore. They will cover their face with baby powder. They will put things on them and they will never care. The people who are dancing, they'll keep dancing as if no one is doing something to them because they will know straight away, this is somebody from my rival tribe.
That is such a beautiful explanation of it. And I can just picture it as you're talking about the powder going over you while you're dancing. Is there ever a time when it gets serious?
Yes, it does. For example, in the province of Tailevu, because in Fiji we have 14 provinces and the different layers of rivalry. So you've got a rivalry within the family. And then you also have the tribal rivalry. And then you also have the Vanua rivalry. Now, when it comes to war rivalry, that's a different situation. For example, on the island of Matuku in Laos, what happened was during the 1800s when the Tongans were in Fiji, trying to infiltrate Fiji, and the missionaries were there as well. You know, there was lots of people from France, from England, and they all want to have a little piece of Fiji, and the Tongans were there too. Now, when they were trying to come over to Matuku, Matuku is a different island altogether. It's a very strong island because it's very difficult to actually weaken them. So when it comes to war, Matuku, they were already under the Tongan leadership. They were already Tonganized, if you can say it, because there was already traditional relationship between Tonga and Lakemba because a lot of marriage was already taking place, right? So the seriousness of this rivalry can also mean death. But for you to avoid death, women were used. So that's when the rivalry become very, very serious. So in this case, because of the war rivalry that was happening around that time, the only way for them to weaken Matuku was to bring a Vasu means Pahu, right, in Tongan. It's like your dead sister's children. The Pahu and the Vasu, oh man, that's powerful stuff. So what happened was the people of Lakemba, they brought one of their daughters over to Matuku. So when the people of Matuku saw their Vasu coming in, they put their war clubs down. So this war rivalry can really mean death, but they can use the Pahu relationship to, you know, weaken another tribe. So again, if you think about it, you know, coming back to relationships, rivalry also strengthens alliances.
Why do you think village rivalries are so common, particularly in Fiji?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think one issue that comes up when it comes to village rivalry, you know, back in the day was territory and power. Those are the two key points I want to highlight, that, you know, land was such a very valuable resource. And so they used the rivalry in order to gain more land, because back in the day, the more land you have, the more powerful you are. And even today in Fiji, when someone say, you know, and claim to be a chief, for example, when somebody, you know, says, you know, I'm the chief over there. And usually the people say, show us your land. That's usually the one line that is often used. So for you to show your land, that justify your claim that you are the chief. Because when you're a chief, then you have land and you have people. And so to me, those are the two important points. There were rivalries back in the day because of territory and because of power. Because leadership back in the day, the more land you have, the more people you garner under you, the more powerful you become. And the extension of your territory can go beyond islands. And the more you have that, the more stronger you are.
What are some of the ways you'd see these rivalries play out? Like, were some of them physical or were there some mental games involved in these?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a combination of both. Rivalries, you know, takes place, you know, in a very physical way. Back in the day, those of us who are from the outer islands, you know, the double hull canoes, you know, was such a really important vessel, you know, that can be used for just normal day-to-day travel, but also can be used for war purposes. But then it can also be mental. I remember reading a book that was mentioned about the island of Moala in Laos, and there were boats that were out there in the horizon, and they were coming across the horizon to the island. But they did not land. But there were so many canoes, you know, in the horizon. And just their presence alone sent shivers down the spine of the people in Moala. you know, how scared they were. The canoes actually turned around and went back, but they were actually sending a signal. They were sending a message. You better listen to what we tell you. You better answer our demands. We will come back, yeah, and get you. So it's kind of like fascinating to see, but definitely back in the day, both physical and also mental.
When they've gone through all these rivalries, how did villages broker peace?
One thing that is beautiful about our culture, when you look at our lives, you know, it's so balanced. There's always a time of war, but there's always be a time of peace. And, you know, when you see post-war recovery and you see where people, you know, provide spaces for apology, it's so beautiful to see, you know, where they actually, what we call the sorrow. It's a Fijian word for sorrow. When you say sorrow, S-O-R-O, it means you're coming to say and ask for forgiveness. And that's where they bring, you know, bales of masi, etapa. They even bring a whale's tooth, tambua. And then, of course, they bring the mangiti, which are the piles and piles of taro. You know, that kind of alliance building, it's so beautiful. Even though everyone doesn't want to go to war, we always say that there's always a reason why they have to go to war. There's always a purpose. They don't just go to war for the sake of it. There has to be a reason. Sometimes the reasons for war are so petty. And sometimes I'm thinking they could have just sat around the cover bowl and talked about it. But then a war has to happen. So, yeah, there's a beauty about the sorrow, the ceremony, you know, for them to say sorry and come back to equilibrium.
Some of these long-standing feuds play out in modern arenas like the rugby field. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think I just love the fact that, you know, rivalry can transcend generations, even up until the modern times we live in. And what a good way to use sports, you know, to bring that banter and rivalry together. You know, I used to remember when Tonga and Samoa, you know, when they used to come over to Fiji to play, the stadiums are always full. People would be like, let's go, the Tongans are in town or the Samoans are in town. Let's go and beat them up in a literal way through sports. And I think, you know, so it's a beautiful thing, you know, when you're looking at rivalry in a modern setting, you know, that sports can bring, you know, can kind of give them that extra power and mana. And I feel that this kind of relationship has so much of that, that are still in our DNA from way back then, you know, in the 1800s and beyond. But I think the rivalry on the rugby field can be taken in a positive light, you know, because when you are playing against another team, it can give you that extra power, you know, to say, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to win this game. So mentally, you know, it can be a positive thing for the two countries. And of course, you know, looking at the three countries, Fiji will always be the win.
Rivalries, old and new, serve a special purpose in our communities. Whether it's on the field or in the stands, they've been part of our cultures for generations. Thankfully, we've come a long way from the violence of tribal warfare. Well, maybe there's still a little elbowing in a pack scrum or snarky banter between fans, but it's all in the name of friendly competition, right? This is Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia. Culture Compass is hosted by me, Seyuli Salamasina von Reiki. Our ABC Radio Australia executive producer is Falangafulu Inga Stunzner. From Deadset Studios, our producer is Lucy McAfee. Supervising producer is Grace Pashley, and our executive producer is Rachel Fountain. Audio editing and sound design by Nick McCorriston. This episode was produced on the lands of the Turrbal, Jagera and Dhurrumbal people. We pay respects to their elders, past and present.